Welcome to Alaska Edition, a weekly public affairs program produced by Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated in the studios of KAKM. The host and moderator for Alaska Edition is Michael Carey.
Thank you for joining us. Our guests today are Paul Jenkins of the Anchorage Daily Planet, Dermot Cole of the Fairbanks Daily News Miner, and Tim Bradner of the Alaska Journal of Commerce. Paul, Israel Keyes, the serial killer, has dominated the news completely here in South Central Alaska this week. Now he's taken his own life in prison. We know some of what he did. We know a few things about him. But are we getting any closer to what makes a man like this?
I don't know that we are. I don't think that we may ever. I really truly understand what he was doing and what drove him to do what he did. He confessed to killing 8 people. Two in Vermont, 5 we don't know where they are, where they were from, Samantha Koenig here. And it was just the cold-bloodedness of it all, the calculated kill her, leave her in a shed, come back and kill her later, and then dismember her after going on a cruise. This is part of his story.
It's incredible that he went on the cruise, then we learned today in the Daily News, he went to a wedding.
And now we find out that he may have been doing this as early as 1996, 1998. FBI is trying to find his first victim, a woman who would have been a teenager, Ben Oregon, who he claimed was his first victim. He attacked her and raped her, and there was no police report made. So we're not sure who she is or trying to find her at this point. He grew up and attended a very small church. They believe the Aryans, if you will, were the real Israelites. It was an anti-Semitic organization, and then he claimed he was an atheist, and he went from there, even to the point of disrupting his sister's wedding a few days after the murder. So he had some incredible psychological, emotional problems. I doubt very seriously that he just killed 8 people. I mean, the trajectory on these guys is when they start, they don't take long periods off. If he claims he started in 96, he probably started earlier, and he probably did several more along the way.
And we're going to be interested to find out his service record, a whole variety of where
military,
he's been, what he was
all of
doing.
That. Yeah. He buried weapons in various places, weapons and ammunition, and he liked to use plastic zip ties, had those buried in several locations, the FBI says. So he was a very well organized, very controlling, and a very thoughtful killer, if there is such a thing.
Okay. Headline, U.S. budget cuts could be big blow to Alaska. Paul, walk us through this story. What's behind the headline?
This is an amazing story. In Alaska, the federal government spends $15,000 for every man, woman, and child in the state. Half of it's defense spending, half of it goes to civil programs. January 2nd, budget cutting law goes into effect. $1.3 trillion in cuts over 10 years takes effect then, as do the expiration of the Bush era and Obama era tax cuts. So those taxes will go up immediately. Plus you've got Obamacare taxes, which will pop up on the plate. There's going to be a lot of angst and consternation in early January, I think, when the public realizes how much this is going to cost them. In Alaska, where we have military bases and communities that depend heavily on military bases, I think the severe cuts here might be a real problem. It's going to cost, there's a guy at the George Mason University who estimated it to be 2.14 million jobs nationwide.
Presumably this is an economist.
This is an economist. Or 10,411, I don't know how we get to that exact figure, 10,411 in Alaska. And it won't happen all at once. It'll be a steamroll effect over the next year or two. We'll start seeing losses in jobs, losses in income, programs drying up, that sort of thing.
But Tim, from Washington, isn't the latest news that while the president and John Boehner and Mitch McConnell in the Congress continue to spar, they continue to suggest that we may be getting closer to the proverbial deal?
Well, Mike, what you see in the headlines is really maybe, you know, the posturing, you know, the public face that is being put on, and you hope there are things going on behind the scenes, because I can't imagine these guys would let us really get to the cliff.
But here's your Christmas present.
Yeah, but you know, that's only 3 weeks away, and that is a little scary that we could even be this close. But you hope that something is going on behind the scenes. Lisa Murkowski is convinced that it's going to work out, or at least she was saying that when she was up here recently. And Mark Begich pretty much says the same thing. It's just inconceivable to me that they would be that derelict in their duties to let this thing happen.
And Obama does seem to have the momentum because of the election returns. Yeah. He certainly can quote them. Dermot, in Fairbanks, it looks as if the air wing that might have been transferred from Eielson Air Force Base down here to Elmendorf is going to stay for the time being in Fairbanks. How did our congressional delegation engineer this, and how permanent is this hold?
Well, Mike, it's both Senator Begich and Senator Murkowski have made it a big point to say that they're doing all they can to protect Eielson Air Force Base and to prevent this transfer. And they both have, you know, individual amendments that have delayed it in one way or the other, requiring extended study, requiring, you know, cost-benefit analysis, and, you know, what they say is preventing the sort of backdoor base closure plan, which is what they considered this was. The difficulty for Alaska and for Eielson in particular is that the lack of a separate mission for Eielson Air Force Base. The F-16s there are used in a training capacity largely, with part of what's known as Red Flag Alaska. And as long as that's the single leading Air Force presence, the base is vulnerable, because that's, you know, they, people from Washington, D.C. look and say, well, why don't we just transfer that all to Anchorage? So it's hard to say what's going to happen with this, but I think that the political opposition from the Alaska delegation has been effective in delaying it. That's for sure.
Well, I would also think that if this worked as a long-term strategy, every congressional delegation faced with a base closure would do the exact same thing.
That's true. And one of the other elements here is that if this wasn't a cut to Alaska, this was a cut or transfer
with
one state.
For Alaska, it's a zero-sum game. For Fairbanks, it's very damaging, or believed to be very damaging.
That's true. But another element here that's probably, I think it's kind of hard to quantify at this point, is that, you know, the Obama administration is not going to want to necessarily harm Mark Begich. And if this transfer took place within the next couple of years, that would probably make his reelection effort all that much harder. So that might be a factor in this if there's a White House involvement in slowing it down. I think if it was just the Air Force making the decision, they would go ahead and do this.
And as we know, Congress has an absolute genius for delaying things. Tim, NSTAR is warning customers there may be a gas shortage. You can go on their website and read what they have to say. What is the gas situation here in South Central Alaska?
Well, Mike, you know, it's been cold here, and NSTAR is, I talked to them just this morning, that's the Friday morning. NSTAR is using gas at near record amounts, and they say they're in an uncomfortable situation. They say no shortage is immediately looming, meaning that, you know, our gas furnaces are going to run dry likely this winter. But they're withdrawing gas from the new gas storage facility that was built last year. They're withdrawing more than they thought they would. What's a little bit disturbing is that they have a system where they have an auction system where you put out a call for any producer that has a surplus amount of gas can bid to supply NSTAR with small quantities short term. They are getting some responses to this. It's expensive. And they're not getting enough. They're not getting what they're asking for.
What kind of a company would this bidder be, and how would it get it to NSTAR?
Well, I would think these would be produced. There's three or four producers in Cook Inlet, and from time to time they might have a small volume of surplus gas for one reason or another, some operational reason. So they could sell it at a short-term sale. It's like a bidding system to the local gas utility. Most of the gas the producers are producing are sold under long-term contracts, most of it to the producers. Of course, this story has been developing for a long time. The bottom line is the gas fields in South Central are running down. we are below the point where we can produce enough to supply it during the winter. So now we have gas storage this year for the first time, thankfully. We used to be able to, ConocoPhillips used to be able to divert gas from the LNG plant to solve these kind of problems. But they can't do that anymore because the LNG plant is not making LNG anymore. And all of their gas is being sold to utilities.
Two quick questions. First one is, are the subsidies that have been offered to drillers or potential producers working, or is it too early to know in South Central?
To some extent, they're working. One company, Buccaneer Energy, has been pretty aggressive and has found some gas. They have a new jackup rig in Cook Inlet. They're going to be drilling for gas this winter. A little too early, not significant enough gas. The other company that brought a jackup rig and made big announcements last year of finding major amounts of gas has been absolutely quiet. I mean, they have not made a peep.
And which company is that?
Oh, it's a company called Fury. And it used to be called Escapeta. And they bought a jackup rig from the Gulf Coast on a Chinese ship. And they thumbed their nose at the Jones Act. And the government thumbed its nose back and made them pay a $15 million fine. But anyway, that's in court. But anyway, I think, you know, we are paying a lot of subsidies. These wells, Fury, for example, is almost 100% subsidized by the state.
And we should alert people, and you know this far better than I do, that it's not going to be that NSTAR would tell you, sorry, folks, we're out of gas. There would be all kinds of interim measures to get people to use less, to lower their thermostats, that sort of thing, right?
That's right. And also the NSTAR tells me that if they ever really got into a jam, they could borrow gas or buy gas from the electric utilities. But then because they have the capability to shift to diesel to some extent, but then we pay for that. NSTAR has no alternative. NSTAR depends totally on the local gas supply.
Okay, let's go back to Dermot Cole. Dermot, Fairbanks is engaged in another one of those wintertime intramural struggles where Fairbanks tees off on Fairbanks. This time the fight is over wood smoke, and it's become quite intense, and you've devoted quite a bit of time to covering the wood smoke controversy.
Yeah, Mike, the Fairbanks is a, you know, so-called a non-attainment area under the EPA rules for what's known as fine particulate pollution. These are tiny particles, much basically invisible to the human eye, but it's the product of combustion, incomplete combustion, dust is much bigger than these particles. But the levels in Fairbanks and North Pole are far in excess of federal standards in the last few weeks. Increased wood smoke and coal smoke is a major factor in that. People have gone to burning more wood and coal in coal furnaces and houses because of the high price of oil. Oil heat is still the dominant element here, but with this growing number of people burning wood, the air pollution has been getting worse and worse in the past few years. And this year we had particularly strong inversions. Now, an inversion, as you remember from your time in Fairbanks, is when it's very cold on the ground, and as you go up higher, it gets warmer. For instance, today, it's Friday, it was 29 below early this morning at the airport. 100 yards up, it was 20 degrees warmer. So in that situation, the pollutants get trapped low to the ground, and we're having kind of repeated weather pattern like that. And, this is creating a problem, and there's no real simple means of cleaning this up.
We can't make eye contact, so I have to interrupt you. I think I saw something around 4,000 homes are burning wood. Is that correct in the Anchorage area, in the Fairbanks area?
Yeah, Mike, it actually might even be more than that. I don't know that anybody has an exact count. And more people who have had wood stoves as alternate energy sources are using that as a dominant energy source. And so the recommendations are to burn wood hot, burn dry wood, and not burn it on the very low parts of Fairbanks where the pollution levels are the highest. We've had levels that are worse than those in Shanghai and Beijing in recent days.
Didn't you say that at one point Fairbanks had the worst measurable air in the world except for one industrial plant in China? I think I remember that was on one of your posts.
Well, I was a little bit, I hedged that a little bit. It was worse than anywhere in the United States. And the spot that I could find where it was worse in than the readings locally was in the Canton in China. There's probably other places where it's worse. But
now,
this
for our viewers down in Anchorage or people who are unfamiliar with wood smoke, do you walk outdoors in some parts of out of your house in some parts of Fairbanks and does it smell like you're right next to a campfire? Is that what you got?
Yes, that's true. In fact, in the North Pole area, generally, it's been like that. It's also been like that to some extent in downtown Fairbanks and in some areas near school, particularly near schools. We've had some neighborhoods where wood burning is particularly heavy and the pollution is quite high. It's several times the federal standard.
Okay, how long could this go on?
Well, inversions are not here all the time, but they are here. They're a common thing in the winter, broken up by periods in which the air, fresh air comes through and blows everything out. So it's often a factor throughout the winter. It gets worse when the temperatures are colder, but it could be here for several weeks or a couple months.
Okay, I was told by somebody from Fairbanks, and I did not have a chance to check this out, that the city of Fairbanks and the borough of Fairbanks are two different entities in this, and Fairbanks, the city, actually does control this kind of wood burning. Is that correct?
No, it's not correct. The regulation of this is very disjointed and ineffective, frankly. The state and the borough are the two key players, along with the EPA, and the state and the borough are sort of relying, they're shared responsibility, and no one's really taking full responsibility for this. The real sticking point in this, you know, in a larger picture is this: the state has to submit an air attainment plan to the EPA showing how Fairbanks will come into compliance with federal air standards, and that's coming up shortly. They're probably going to ask for a delay, but by sometime next year, they're supposed to come up with a plan to show just how the winter air will improve. You know, most of the people throughout this area have an interest in seeing this and trying to hope things are better.
Okay. Dermot, let's stay with you on the energy. Fairbanks wants cheap natural gas. That's been known for a long time, and that's a large part of the reason so many people are burning wood because of the price of home heating fuel. How expensive is home heating fuel these days in Fairbanks, and what are the prospects for natural gas, expanded natural gas in Fairbanks at the present time?
Okay, as I said before, home heating oil is still the major heat way of people heat their homes here. There's a very small natural gas distribution system, which has prices that are more than double the prices in Anchorage. But that small system serves only less than about 1,000 homes and businesses. Most people are burning oil. Many thousands are burning wood now. Heating oil is close to $4 a gallon. It's just under it now. It sort of rises and falls along fairly closely tracking the price of unleaded regular in recent months. Because of this high price, there's been a great push here that's picking up speed in the last couple of years and really intensity to get natural gas from the North Slope or even from Cook Inlet to the Fairbanks area to help get Fairbanks off of oil and onto natural gas. There's several different things that are taking place. Probably the key one is an attempt to get a state subsidy from the Parnell administration, or if not from the Parnell administration, to get the local legislative delegation to have something put in the capital budget next year to get a gas trucking operation built on the North Slope and or an expanded gas distribution system in the Fairbanks area.
And if I understand it correctly, the gas would be trucked to Fairbanks and they're burned by a utility rather than distributed to individual homeowners at the present time anyway. Is that correct?
Right. The main use would be to supply a electric utility plant in North Pole that's now burning oil that would be shifted to natural gas. Secondarily, the fuel would also be available to supply a natural gas distribution system. And a municipal utility has also been formed to actually start building up a natural gas distribution system in areas of the community that are not served by that small system I mentioned before.
Now, would any of these facilities or any of these programs have to be approved by legislative appropriation, or is there some other way that they could approach this through ADA or some other entity?
Yeah, there's a combination of factors there. They're going to be looking for state grants. And so, and again, as I said, if the governor doesn't include that in his budget, the local legislators will probably be hit up by the
community. And finally, a question here. If Fairbanks is going to say, we have a fuel that's way too expensive, it costs too much to heat our homes, aren't there a whole bunch of other communities all over Alaska that can say the exact same thing or say, let me tell you about it?
That's exactly right. And that's why one of the aspects of this with the North Slope trucking plant would be propane availability that they say could be shipped along the Yukon River and Tana River, for instance, and beyond, really, to supply other areas. I think that holds a lot of potential. I mean, the key thing driving this, Mike, is that in the United States, and to a lesser degree in Alaska, natural gas is a very cheap fuel right now, while crude oil is very expensive. And it's that differential that's really driving this and making people really long to switch fuels.
Okay, let's leave it right there. Paul Jenkins, Rum Runners, the downtown nightclub and drinking establishment, may be going the way of the buffalo if some of the assembly members and legislators have their way. They have a checkered past, problem with their bouncers, and now there's a proposal to sell the liquor license. This all involves politics and a lot of money, or at least a lot of money to most of us.
A lot of money to most of us is for sure. What we have is an establishment downtown Anchorage that has had many run-ins with the Alcohol Beverage Control Board people. They've the violations for this and that and the other thing. And their license is coming up for renewal at the end of the year. Patrick Flynn, Assemblyman Patrick Flynn, not only opposes renewing the license, he doesn't want the license to be able to be sold. So he is trying to block any sale. Anything happened like that, you wind up with a license just going away. We've got state legislators have weighed in on this thing. Now, Representative Les Garris, Senator Johnny Ellis, opposed the renewal, but not necessarily the sale of the license. And lo and behold, we have Dan Coffey, a former assemblyman, has stepped up and brokered a deal with TGI of Friday, the owner of whose name is Bruce Burnett, to buy the license and set up business there and lease the building and operate it as a business. He already owns a TGIF, I guess, in Midtown, which has had zero.
And what did they point to his problems. Good reputation out there and stuff?
Zero problem. Ernie Hall, Assembly Chairman, says there is a resolution in the works at the Assembly to stop it.
So the real issue here is, are the owners of Rum Runners going to get paid out or not? That's what it sounds like.
Well, and that's what Flynn objects to. He objects to them having all these problems cashing out and walking down the road.
Okay. So. Tim Bredner, you reported in your publication, Journal of Commerce, the state may lose as much as $700 million a year this year in revenue next year. Why?
Well, Mike, that's what the new state revenue forecast says. And part of the reason the state, at least the administration says, is because oil has been declining production. Oil prices will be about the same. And what's different is production is down, and that explains the difference. Now, already you have some legislators that are linking this to the coming oil tax debate and saying that the Department of Revenue is cooking the numbers. And I haven't really looked in detail at it, but I kind of doubt that.
They're going to say that happened. No matter what they say.
Yeah. But the fact is, this is kind of like our cooking the gas situation we talked about earlier. This has been coming for some time. Oil production has been declining about 5-6% a year for several years now.
Yeah, and when I read the story, it seemed to me also that there's going to be a decline in federal spending, independent of the issues Paul raised.
Well, yeah. I mean, if under even fiscal cliff aside, we are looking at the likelihood of just continued tightening up of federal budgets, declines, not as much, Uncle Ted's gone, so, not as much federal money circulating up here. So that combined with the declining oil production and declining revenues over the long term, I think, is presenting us with some interesting financial problems for our state.
Thank you. Dermot Cole, Fairbanks is cold and dark at this time of year. We've had some stories that have sort of a hard edge to them about fuel shortages, high prices, unhappy constituents, unhappy consumers. Can we have some good news out of the Golden Heart City of Interior Alaska?
Yeah, we sure can, Mike. First of all, I love being in Fairbanks in December and January, too. And I know some of the people in Anchorage have a hard time believing that, or they question my sanity. But no, a lot of people do. I do love Fairbanks, and I love cold weather.
I love Fairbanks when it's below zero in the winter.
So April in Fairbanks. You ever heard that song? Anyway, there are some good things. Actually, the AFN convention is going to be in Fairbanks next October, and people here are very excited about that. Secondly, the Lonely Planet publication, kind of a major national travel journal, put Fairbanks second on the list of top destinations for 2013.
What do they like about Fairbanks?
Well, they like the aurora in particular, and this is a good place to see the aurora. And since 2013 is supposed to be a good year for seeing the Northern Lights, they're recommending that people try to come here. Of course, there's not a real lot of attention on how much you see the Northern Lights in July and
August. Yes, that's exactly right.
Although, well, June. Actually, you do see the Northern Lights. You can see the Northern Lights in August, the end of August, if you're lucky. But, of course, the best time to see the Northern Lights is in the winter. And, a lot of people don't seem to like the winter for some reason.
I wonder why that is. We're going to go outside and take a look at the Northern Lights right now because we're out of time.
If you have questions or comments about the program, you can email Alaska Edition at alaskaedition@alaskapublic.org or write us at 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. Alaska Edition is a production of KAKM. The opinions expressed are those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent those of KSKA, KAKM, the licensee, or their underwriters.